Miami, home to sun, sand, water, plus books, new ideas, author conversations, and the Miami Book Fair, the nation's largest gathering of readers and writers of all ages. Mark your calendar for the 38th edition of the Miami Book Fair, Sunday to Sunday, November 14th to the 21st, bringing together the greatest thinkers of our time, in person and virtually, talking about the issues of the day with audiences of all ages. Join the conversations about sci-fi, the environment, American politics, and world history. Participating will be authors with new fiction, nonfiction, memoir, and essays. Chris Matthews, Channing Tatum, Alan Cumming, James Patterson, and Twilight's Marissa Meyer, too. All this and more at the 38th edition of the Miami Book Fair, November 14th to the 21st, 2021. All coming together for 1 week, in person and online. Do join us. More information at miamibookfaironline.com or follow us at Miami Book Fair.
For maximum customer engagement and retention, choose CleverTap. CleverTap is a leading customer engagement and retention platform that helps digital brands maximize lifetime value. Over 8,000 apps around the world, including Vodafone, Star, and Sony, trust CleverTap to improve user engagement, boost retention, and fuel long-term revenue growth. Learn more at clevertap.com. That's clevertap.com.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology on WMR.fm. It is the 28th of October. I believe it's October still. I know, eh? 2021. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. And Dave, yeah, man, I mean, like, it's October. It doesn't feel like October. It is a balmy 17, 18 degrees Celsius, which has got to translate into, what, 63, 64 degrees Fahrenheit in Toronto, Ontario. At the end of October, it should be close to zero right about now. So I don't know. It feels like late August to me.
To me, it is like right now we've got about 8 degrees. So that turns into about mid to high 40s, and it's raining and gray. So in Victoria, that's everything from October straight through till May.
Yep. Boy, do I miss that. It was a weird week in the search world. It's one of those weeks where it felt like a lot of stuff happened, but when you look at it, not a lot of stuff actually really happened. Before we go, we got a public service announcement for the people of Timber Ridge, British Columbia, way up in Upper Canada up there, right? So, like, last we heard, your internet was down over the weekend. You probably already knew that, though. We just wanted to tell you that TELUS found out who's been skunking your systems. It was the beavers. The damn beavers did it, building another damn dam. For sure, right? Yeah, so you can go see pictures that TELUS posted over there on their, like, internet web pages, or you can go to Ars Technica, which is thoroughly amused by the entire story. So as it turns out, a bunch of the small town of Tumbler Ridge in northern British Columbia, Canada, was taken offline by beavers building a dam. The world is precarious, Dave. We don't think about beavers enough.
I know. As a Canadian, of course, I'm like, yeah, that tracks. They were probably drunk on maple syrup, though. So, you know.
Yeah, they didn't know what they was doing. they went into the syrup, and you know how it goes.
You know what? I'm realizing as we're saying this, we are part of the stereotype problem, Jim. We're part of the problem.
Yeah, but, you know, it feels your time. So, you know, cool runnings, eh?
Yeah. Well played. Okay.
So, Core Web Vitals. Do you remember back at the time when you were like desperately concerned about how fast your page was loading and first contentful paint and, you know, how much it was dancing around as it loaded and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You did so much. Was it worth it? It's an open-ended question. There's a debate in the SEO world right now, so I'm shooting the question at you. I got a bunch of clients to obsess on Core Web Values for a few months there. Was mm-hmm. it worth it?
You know, to me, I'll tongue-in-cheek this one and give the sort of a similar response to what I would to like on climate change if I was discussing it with somebody who didn't believe that this was a man-made issue, and just go, you know, I guess if it wasn't worth it, I just made my website faster and better for nothing, right? Like, and on climate change, I'd be like, well, I guess I made the planet better for nothing, right? It wasn't for climate change. I just made the planet better and cleaner. In this case, okay, so you made your site faster for your users. Let's say it wasn't a big deal, like from a Google-y standpoint, it's probably just inherently good. But this story also, or the polling also does take me to right after the mobile first indexing. We had the same conversation. Right? HTTPS, right after, we had kind of a very similar conversation. It was a little more abrupt, but it was a very similar conversation. Well, that was lackluster. Give it some time. I think Google's good at that. Like, we're going to give you a warning shot. Then we're going to like really tell you we've done this thing. And I think they sort of give us time to go, okay, every new thing that's developed now will conform to this. so we'll sort of ease in a little bit. That's what I think is going on. But at worst, I made my site faster for users, right? At worst.
There you go. I think it's a really good way to look at it. And that might actually be a really good way for the makers of content management systems to look at it. There's been, many of us may or may not have known this, but there's been a quiet little Cold War brewing in the background, in the back end of websites all over the place between WordPress, Drupal, Duda, and Wix. Mm-hmm. The most common content management sites. And the objective of this little Cold War was to be the fastest and the template that produced the best Core Web Vital results. Okay, there was a four-way race here. Out of curiosity, who do you think won that race? Who do you think produced the best Core Web Vital values for their users?
I'm going to let you share the story. I didn't know it before you shared it with me. And then before the show, you had shared it and I read it and I went, okay, I did not see that coming. So what do you think, Jim, or who is it, Jim?
Okay. Duda. Yeah. Duda had the best Core Web Vitals, turnaround, about almost 70% of websites built with the Duda content management system had a very good Core Web Vitals score. But it's second place that will probably leave a lot of SEOs, especially SEOs who haven't been paying attention to this content management system. Wix came second, with Drupal coming third and WordPress placing fourth.
Yeah.
So WordPress has some ground to make up, but the surprise one here, the real surprise out of the box is Wix. Do you remember a few years ago when Wix was the ugly duckling of website template builders or content management systems?
Oh yeah, we used to rightfully make fun of it in like a, and if somebody came to me with a Wix site and said, can you optimize this? I would say, if you can move it out of Wix. First thing we need to do is get it out. You know, they, to their credit, and I think that's what you're getting at. Like, this is just another example of credit to them. They're making big moves right now. And out of all those plugins we have to jam in to make our WordPress sites faster, well, Wix is doing it. It's already there out of the box. So it is such a, like, do I think that's like a one size fits all reason for everybody to abandon WordPress? No, there's a lot of other perks to go on with WordPress and other ways to speed up your site. But I think this is a big win for them. Or at least, and since, as you know, as we were talking about earlier, like, speed is not maybe the SEO factor that we were all sort of like led to believe it might be, sort of. But when I think about it, I'm like, they said one of hundreds.
Right?
Like,
that's right.
They were very clear, like, this is going to be like a tiebreaker. This, like, they were clear with us what it was going to be. But I think this is a clear sign that Wix is paying strong attention to SEO.
And they've shown, they're demonstrating that they are willing to drastically improve if the community asks them to. And one of the signs that they hired Marty away from SEMrush, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So they went out of their way to get one of the best PR people they could possibly get their hands on, pulled him away from SEMrush, and now he's basically telling Wix what the community is telling each other. We need to see this, and you've got to do this. And I think the days of just turning down Wix straight, just without even thinking about it, those are over. You got to learn it. You got to be familiar with it. And folks were going to be working in it.
Yeah.
But congratulations to them too. Dude, it was expected of you. Like, of course you're supposed to be number one. Drupal and WordPress, my goodness. It was expected of you guys to do really good too, but you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
Okay. This is, you know, those things we say about John Mueller when he answers the question and he answers the question, but doesn't necessarily answer all the myriad of side things that might be around the question.
Mm-hmm.
Best example I've ever seen of this, I think. So you probably know this, being a good SEO. The amount of images you have on a single page doesn't help it rank. Mm-hmm. That's it. Images don't help you rank. John Mueller was answering a question, and in the answer of the question, I think he answered the question specifically, but he left a bunch of stuff out, or he didn't think through the answer. He suggested images aren't important to web search. He used the example of a gray box, where John said, within web search, we really don't care if it's a gray square or a picture of a beach. He does go on to say that Google does care in image search what the content of an image might be, but during web search, it's not so important. So adding more images is going to do absolutely nothing to help you rank. That's probably true. But there's a bunch of attributes and basic properties to and around images that Google does need to care about. How big is the image? How is it loading? When is it loading? Does its existence add to or take away from page usability? Is there alt text describing the image? Those are important still, aren't they?
Yeah, and I get the question, I get the answer. Both of them are, the question was good. Like, in the context that it was being asked in, I think it's a good question. You know, because we were dealing with a like sort of lazy loading-ish kind of scenario where it was just popping in as gray boxes, and they were concerned that, like, is this how Google's going to see it? And if they don't see these images, John's answering the question. That's a very, very purist SEO answer that he gave. So on that count, sure. But then the questions you're asking are great. And as we talked about, I think it was last week, might have been the week before, talking about mom, right? It's multimodal, right? Like, so now it specifically as an algorithm is looking at multiple different content types and sort of grouping the information together into one understanding. So if they can't see the images, will that negatively impact mom, or is mom just not involved in this sort of stage of the process? Like, is that just not what it's built to do? That's also possible, but I think there's a lot of questions involved in this, and we can go straight to the, like, do images serve the user? It doesn't mean Google understands the images. They might just need the placeholder to go, yeah, users like pages broken up like this. So good. You haven't just put like this big, like 8,000 word block of text in front of people. But if they are reading deeper, right? If they are going, okay, it ranks an image search for this query, so the image processors have looked at it, or the computer vision systems have looked at it, created this, we're dropping it into this page. Okay, we can connect those two dots together, you know, in a sort of simplified sort of MUM format. Should that impact that page? I would say yes. And I would say it's almost dangerous if we take John at his word. I don't think he's lying.
Indeed,
but
I think the
future is different than the present that is being described, and the question is being answered in a very, very present approach to the question.
Yeah, the answer as he phrased it left a weird feeling in my gut, but yeah. He's right. Google doesn't care as the page is rendering. It doesn't matter what's in that space. It matters that the space is defined and that Google can find the information around the images, around that space, that image, that object, to know what it is. And moreover, that it does have the alt text, that it does define the size of the image, that it that the image is light and not dragging the entire load time down.
Right.
Or that as the image loads, it doesn't push this important form or box over, so it frustrates the heck out of the user while it's loading.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are important. So when you read that answer, or if you came across that as that's why it made you feel weird. There's a lot of stuff that just wasn't there.
Well, indeed. And I mean, we could even take it sort of one step further and go right into search results. We've all seen sort of a featured snippet where it has the content, has a few images. Some of them are from that site. Some of them are not. Clearly, Google is extrapolating an understanding of those images and viewing them as important in the layout of a page, or in this case, a search result. So yeah, it just nags at my brain that no, the answer isn't that. Like, it's not that simple. It does need to understand what the context of the image is, to understand its context around whether the question is being answered properly. You know, maybe if it's a travel site with just like images, they would go, yeah, we know they're talking about beaches. It's a picture of the beach. A gray box will do it. Right. But like, I read up a lot on machine learning stuff. I, you know, work in machine learning space, like a lot. And I need those images to understand what's going on. And so Google's understanding of what's going on in imagery there can be critically important. And that's just one example. It happens in many, many spaces. I know I've flogged this dead horse, but it's just driving me nuts, that answer. And it's been driving me nuts since I first read it.
Yep. Well, I think we're in agreement on it. And I'm glad to have addressed it, because it was just sitting there like a sore thumb. So I'm glad you have. Okay, speaking of images, this has been something that's been on webmasters, parents, teachers, safety advocates, people's minds for since the web's existed. And you know, that's privacy of young people, of minors, people who aren't really able to have license over how their image or person is used commercially, or hell, even by their parents, eh? Mm-hmm. So Google has announced a new policy and a tool that's going to allow people to remove images of kids, minors, teens, people under the age of 18 from Google search results and from web search. How exactly they get around people faking, I'm not sure, but you have to submit a removal request, and then there's several steps to go through. You get an automated, you get an email confirmation. Google's going to review the request. They might gather more information. They may even ask you for more information, including proof of age, which, you know, we're treading privacy weirdness already.
Yeah.
And then if Google's going to actually do anything about it, they'll let you know. They'll give you a notification if any action has been if any action's actually been taken. And if they aren't going to grant the request, they'll let you know why and allow you to resubmit and appeal their decision. Makes me wonder, Dave, though, why don't they just apply this to anybody who wants off the web? Like, seriously, why just minors? Is somebody about to sue them for this? Like, why only minors?
I suspect we're because we're heading into a legal element of things where were you able to give consent, right? Like, what you need to be of legal age. Like, you can't be a minor to sign a binding contract. And I think they're just sort of trying to go into that gray area. And it's also an area that nobody debates. Like, nobody, you know, like, talk about the lowest hanging fruit. And I'm not saying that's their sort of like motivation here. I don't think I have a lot of problems with Google, and we can talk about many of them at a great length, but this isn't one of them. I think they have gone to this one and gone, who's going to disagree if we do this? Virtually nobody. I'm sure I could find somebody if I really tried, but nobody argues with protecting kids ever. So I think it was a really, really easy, low hanging fruit for them to go with. You know, whereas if they go, we're going to let everybody do that, now you get into all sorts of like, I should be protected from predators sort of side of things, because you're dealing with adults, right? Where you're like, no, if somebody's like broken the law or done this, I don't want them to be able to remove themselves, right? Like that sort of thing. Whereas when we're talking about kids, like I as soon as I read that, I'm like, this is awesome, because kids, I count myself, I was under 18 and I was an idiot. And I wasn't carrying around a phone, because my 18-year-old me didn't have, well, I guess 18 is now age of consent, but like, you know, 17 and younger me wasn't walking around with a phone all the time, with their friends walking around with phones all the time at every party, at every event, taking pictures of everything and putting it online. I view this, I'm just like, oh, this is good for you. Like, that was the first thing I thought. I'm like, thank goodness, because there will be a way for you to go back in time and go, that was 17-year-old idiot me, and I need that gone now, because I was a 17-year-old idiot. I'm not saying all 17-year-olds are idiots, but I was at 17. And going, had I been wandering around with a phone like that and all my friends had, it'd be nice to be able to go, you know what? That's not the truth of me that I want the entire world to see forever.
I mean, when it comes to partying, images, and the curation of content, I'm not really sure there's and curation of content online, I'm not sure there's a lot of truth to us that we can show anybody. But the thing I'm really concerned about, and I wish Google would revisit its policy on this. What about a abused woman fleeing a dangerous relationship?
Yeah.
3 years later, a photograph is taken of her in a community halfway across the country where she's reestablished her life, and she's going to freak out because she needs that thing offline, like now, before somebody comes and uses some catfish technology or some facial recognition technology to figure out where she is. If Google's going to apply this, going to offer this right to minors, I believe that they should offer it to everybody. And incidentally, they should offer it to minors. Absolutely, should offer it to minors. No question about that. But I don't see why it shouldn't be offered to others.
And, you know, it might be a case, fingers crossed, right? Like,
I like
see
the
them
idea.
Pushing forward to like, hey, what are other things that nobody can ever disagree with, right? And you've listed a great example. Nobody's going to disagree that's probably, I mean, again, probably a handful, but that's only because some people are jerks.
There's a lot of reason to require privacy in society. And, you know, we forget that the more we give it away from the vast majority of us, it doesn't mean anything. Really, it doesn't.
And go ahead.
Well, honestly, I mean, like, my home address is published online somewhere, right? And I've lived here for like 11 years. Never caused me a problem.
Right.
But for some people, it might.
Right. Oh, absolutely. It might. And this may be a case. I mean, who knows? Because I think we are hitting into a spot that, you are right, that is another great example. And it may be a case of them going, okay, we're going to start with this one because it'd be a great test, like we did with authorship. And then we learned. In that case, it was we learned how to automate. But in this one, okay, what goes wrong when we do something that virtually nobody can have a problem with, right? Like that everybody would sort of conclude that there's no gray, you're under the age of consent. That's that, right? Like there is no gray line there between the age of consent, right? Like everybody goes, you can't vote, you can't drink, you can't, like there's so much you can't do because you're not of the age of consent, right? Like of that legal age. So anything under that, it's just a good firm bar. And I think it'd be a great test case for them if they were looking to expand and go, okay, that woman, she should be protected. we need to know that the mechanism we're going to place for that isn't going to be used incorrectly in other areas, sometimes just to prove that it shouldn't be applied in that the cases where it should, right? And we've all can imagine cases where people would try and prove a situation doesn't work just to actually attack the cases where it should. And again, these are the lowest common denominator human beings, but they are there. So I think we've got a good, hopefully, I hope they are working to address scenarios like that, and that this would be a great line, because it is so black and white where that line is, as far as what you can remove and not. It's just, it's a line, and it's based on age, and there's no question whether it should or should not be included.
The hard thing about the model of the entire internet moving forward, Google can't allow people like you and me to remove ourselves from search. See, it's not that they care one way or another about our personal privacy. It's just that data is their product. And right. If it allows you and me to remove ourselves from search just because we wanna, right, then it could face an entire run on like everybody wanting to remove Google's core product from Google, which is their information. And this could be a real problem, but you know, it mightn't be a problem for long, because have you heard of Jedi Blue?
Oh,
the phrase Jedi Blue.
Yes. Only recently have I heard of that.
Because of this phrase, Google can't let go of you. Can't let go of me. Can't let go of anybody, because we are the product. Same with Facebook. We are the product. And Project Jedi Blue is, God, I can't believe I'm actually going to say this out loud, is a conspiracy between Facebook and Google. It's real. It's out there. This comes from the Facebook whistleblower documents that are in front of Congress. So if you believe someone's sworn testimony that you have to believe that Facebook and Google colluded to push ad rates higher and basically to rig the market.
Right. But and you don't even just need to trust their word. Like, it's documented. They've got documents, and I've seen, as of you on search engine land, like some screenshots of some of the points, and it was rather creative, and I think I 80% understand the mechanics behind what they were doing, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, please. Like, so from October 2016 to the present, Google and Facebook have been, again, colluding on all aspects of advertising, from the information that is served to their users to the price of ads or to the price that advertisers are paying per click.
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, Facebook is introducing a new name tomorrow, and I don't know what's happening at Google, but I'm sure that that folks at Alphabet are trying to come up with, you know, some way to avoid the letter of the law on this one. But this is why all these mechanizations are happening in Silicon Valley right now, because their entire arm up to the elbow was caught in the cookie jar.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And for our listeners who might not understand, and this is just like, I'm sure there's a lot more to it than this, and a lot of what I looked into it past this, but I'm back on the search engine land article. So folks, read up on it there and then chase after to find the real details on this. But what they were doing is, or what Google did is sort of went to Facebook and went, hey guys, we need you to oppose header bidding. And if you do that, we're going to cut you a deal in the ad auction space. Now, what header bidding is, and again, don't take this as like a, research it further if this is important to you. But basically, in the like minute fractions of seconds, a publisher can send out and go, which ad auction will give me the highest dollar value to drop their ad in that spot? So that's sort of the header of this thing. It'll go out to all the publishers, and they'll basically all send back this number back. And then the publisher's system can then go, this one gives me more. Bam. And then show that ad. Makes perfect sense, right? But Google wanted to get out of that, wanted Facebook to pull out of that entire system as well, gave Facebook favorable treatment in their own auctions, For Facebook support to get out of the header system. And I think the estimates were about, oh yeah, the difference that publishers were now being cost was about 19 to 22% higher because they now needed to pick. They needed to go, it's Google, or it's this publisher, this publisher, this publisher. They couldn't just go, whatever one is willing to give me the best deal at this time.
So Google and Facebook basically created two markets.
Yeah, they colluded to basically and beyond taking it to a completely like into two market system. My understanding is they were actually working with Facebook to try and get that other auction system crushed.
Being the two largest advertisers,
being the two, yeah, I mean, you're going to basically crush anything you want. So it's a really, really big deal because you have two companies, yeah, colluding together to try and eliminate the system that actually allows publishers to make money so that they could make that extra money instead. You know, talk about a kick in the teeth to publishers as well. It was a big problem, and it's pretty black and white, and it's right there documented. I'll be very interested to see how this one plays out because it's pretty damning.
Another kick in the teeth to publishers as part of this conspiracy. Google went out of its way to throttle non-resident AMP page speed. So if you didn't have your AMP pages resident at Google, or if you were just serving up content in a non-AMP format, Google was actively slowing your page delivery down.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, so that they could control what ads went where, because AMP being their system, you know? Like, that's not insane, that's evil!
Yeah.
Like, that's evil! Outright manipulative evil. So I expect somebody to stand in front of Congress and to very solemnly tell us that they're very sorry. I don't know what's going to happen from this, but the right punishment is to break the bastards up into little teeny pieces that can't hold that much heft in the marketplace. That's what our parents would have done. That's what they did with Bell Telephone when Bell Telephone was completely abusing its monopoly back in the 1970s. And because of that, we have an extremely, or the Americans have, an extremely vibrant and competitive telecommunications space.
Yeah.
Canada, not so much, but that's different.
You know,
we have succession.
We got pretty bad. Now, I have to wonder if all of this is part of
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
2018 in May, that's when Google officially removed Don't Be Evil. And I wonder if it was after doing this for a couple of years, they were like, you know, guys, we got to get that out of there.
Well, I guess, you know, I think that, you know, they were just tired of having the most junior Google call them on it during their all team calls. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, you know, screw it. We got to get rid of this thing that the young people keep reading it, calling us on it. but yeah, I mean, once you become a publicly traded company, you are no longer beholden to yourself. You are beholden to your shareholders. And you're also beholden to a totally different concept. Most tech entrepreneurs I know got into the space because they wanted to improve the world, or they wanted to create something that solved a problem for them. and they found out that it was a golden goose, sort of like it was something that other people wanted as well. Mm-hmm. They did not, most people I know did not get into the tech world to become bloated, manipulative, evil business people. That might happen. Like, you know, you look into the abyss, you become the abyss. But most of us, including the founders of Google, they created Google to solve a problem they had. They didn't get enough library time, so they brought the library to them. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, Backrub was smart. it solved a problem. They were very altruistic when they opened Google as a privately owned company. That's when don't be evil. Even when they went public and they published that manifesto where they told Wall Street how they were going to do business different. those sweet summer children, eh?
Yeah.
that was so nice and so long ago, almost a decade ago, over a decade. Hell, that was 15 years ago. You know that?
Yeah.
I was still at Stepforth, Matt, and Stepforth was still in Ross's, in the side of Ross's house.
Yeah, that's right.
Way, way, way back then. So that was forever ago.
Yeah, and that's, now, I imagine that conversation went a lot like, we put this manifesto out, and then the shareholders went, and here's who we're putting in as the CEO.
Yeah, have you met Eric? four-letter word, meet people who like four-letter words. And so Google isn't being evil exactly. They're just being honest to what they've become.
Yeah.
And they're doing their job. Their job is to make money for their shareholders, period. Mm-hmm. But you're not allowed to do it illegally. Right. that's the rule. You can't break the law to do it. That's why a lot of businesses fail, because they don't break the law, Dave. They just don't break the law. What do you do, though? Too big to fail. Like, what do you do to Google? What do you do to Alphabet? What do you do to Facebook?
Mm-hmm. And therein is our problem.
So anyway, they're sorry. Moving right along. And it makes me, it burns me. I don't even work in the paid space very much. I like spending my time in the algorithmic space because, you know, it's surprising all the time. I don't know. Yeah. But it burns me that good people have had, you know, life-sustaining money taken out of their pockets and put into the pockets of multi-billionaires.
Well, and what's kind of ironic about this is, who were they stealing from? Publishers. Who produces the lifeblood that Google needs? Publishers. So it's just like you're shooting in the foot the very people that you need. You're the scorpion on the toad.
You know who this really makes me mad at, though, Dave? Really makes me mad at?
Who's
me?
That?
Myself. Because for years, and ever since Doug Heal, I've been screaming about white hat SEO. You owe this to your clients. Google will burn them. You got to conform to the Googleverse, or, you know, you're just taking clients' money to watch them fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not going to speak for you. I'm going to say this is, I'm just speaking for myself here. You can say yay or nay as you will, but I bought the line that we're building a better ecosystem. You know, that if we follow these rules, we're building a better space for the entire web. And that's why we're doing this. And sometimes I can see that, but then it just burns me when they cheat in the background. And so the poll that Mary Hines published the other day about black hat and white hat, where the SEO community itself splits around 50-50 between about 47% who says, I will not do black hat at all. And 23% are like, yeah, of course, absolutely. And the smaller percentage were like, yeah, sometimes, depending on it.
Right.
Why have I been doing this white hat stuff all these years? I mean, I don't worry about algorithm updates. I don't care about algorithm updates. But at the same time, I've been pushing something. Scroogle, screw these guys. I'm so mad at them.
Well, but at the end of the day, right, you can be mad at Google, but you can't be mad at your client. I mean, I guess you can, but
no,
you probably should. you know, so and I've always viewed the debate of black, gray, white in from the context of my clients, right? Or my employer or whoever that might be, where the issue isn't, do I owe Google my allegiance? No, I don't. They're running a company to maximize their profits. And so are the people that I work for. So whatever it takes to do that, that's the obligation that both of us have. And sometimes that's going to pit you against each other. Now, by the same time, a penalty is a quick way from good profits to zero, right? So yeah. Google's got a great mechanism in place to go, yeah, Dave would break the rules, but he's not going to.
We got no power here, dude. They got all the power in this relationship, don't they?
They have all the power there. So I think that's probably where we see the maybe just a little crew coming in at 19.7% answering that question is, I'm doing 100 things and 4 of them I'm just peppering a little, just putting in a little black hat over here and there. And then there are the areas where you hit the gray zones. Is it black? Is it white? You know, and that's not just, I'm not just thinking of the Michael Jackson song, but it's going to be running through my head for the next probably couple days. You know, but where you do hit, there are tactics, especially when you get into JavaScript scenarios and listening to John Mueller when he says you don't need all the functionality of your JavaScript site. You just need it to render properly. And it's like, What am I supposed to do with that? And if I don't load that, I'm actually sending, like if I go, oh, okay, well, I need these scripts for functionality, so I'm going to just pull them off because there's no need to send those to pre-rendering. Well, now I've actually improved my core web vitals and speed, but only to Googlebot. Not to my visitors, but I've done it based exactly on what John said. So am I in the gray zone? Really, those are the sort of bizarre technical like scenarios. And can you tell who's dealing with that very question right now? Like, it's me.
You know, a couple of years ago, I think they would have said that's gray zone. Now I'm not so sure they would, because does that really screw up the user experience?
Right. Well, and the thing is, like, we built the site to be incredibly fast, right? So, you know, is the user negatively impacted? No, but is our core web vitals better?
You're giving to false Googlebot information than to they Google, are sort of.
They're good to both, but they are better to one than to the other. The core content is the same. Mm-hmm. But you know, so those are, I mean, that's just listed as an example. And I've just sort of like gone, okay, no, that's over into this house. That like, I'm just going to give myself a pass on that one. And it's not such a big difference. And I'm not serving anything to Google that I'm not to a user. But those are the sorts of curious things that could ride the line, because I've decided that fits this camp. Other SEOs might decide, no, anything that might move the needle and show anything different kind of scenario is going to fit into the gray or black. They might disagree based on the same amount of experience, and both of us would be equally right.
I think
it's only our interpretation.
I think you're in the venial sin, not the mortal sin area.
Right.
But there are some black hack techniques that are mortal sin. Like they will get you banned. Get an army of clickbots working for you and have Google detect that, for instance.
Right.
You're not going to fare well. No. Even if Google isn't using direct click information, they're still going to feel right arm manipulated.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, there's just the simple go-tos, right? Like, are you buying craptastic links? Like, is this something that you're doing? You know, that fits. But then other people, like if you just said, is buying links bad? I'll bet a lot of people into this crew would go, they might be saying yes or no based on their perception of what that means. And there are times, it depends on that link, where I would put it into either camp. I know on Google, 100% of the time, they would say, as soon as you're incentivizing somebody for a link, other than just giving them great content, you are violating our guidelines. But then you step back into our camp and go, okay, but how am I interpreting that? Right. And so you do hit those gray. But I think for the most part, would I consider myself a white hat SEO? Yes, I do. Because I very rarely skate off. And if I am not following the guidelines directly, I could justify if a Googler asked me why, I know I could justify legitimately to them why that is. And they would understand the purpose of, you know, getting into the like pre-rendering in like this, where it's just like, why are we loading all of this stuff into a system just for you that doesn't need to be there, that causes us problems?
Now, for what it's worth, there is a subsection of the SEO community who work on affiliate sites, their own sites.
Yeah.
We're not talking to these guys.
No.
Right now. We're in fact, many times we wouldn't even presume to talk to these guys about what is the most effective black hat or white hat, because we would be wrong.
They know more than I do about that.
Infinitely. There's a few European search marketers I'm thinking of specifically who could run rings around most search engines with the knowledge and the skills they have. Those aren't most webmasters. That's a small subset. So again, if any of those guys are listening and going, hey, you're all wrong about that, I know we're all wrong. You're right. But yeah, we're not talking to you.
We're not saying black hat is bad. I'm just saying when I'm working at a company, I can't get their site penalized or banned. Yeah. So these are the rules that I need to follow. But I was an affiliate marketer, and you just had sites sitting in the wings, right? Ready to come up, probably already in link development as you were about to burn one to the ground. So.
Oh, God. You know, I'm glad they didn't do this tomorrow. This just happened. The news just broke, Dave. I was gonna leave the show off telling people they still had time to get a name into Facebook for the new name.
Oh.
They changed their name. It's done. They published what their new name is. It's stupid. You ready for it?
What is it, Jim?
I'm sorry to do this to you, and I'm sorry to do this to your friends out there in Radio World. Facebook's new name is Meta. Meta, M-E-T-A, Meta. Yeah.
You know, the only reason I'm going to give them a pass on that name is that I thought the name Alphabet was stupid.
Now, keep in mind, Facebook is still going to be Facebook. Instagram is still going to be Instagram. WhatsApp is still going to be WhatsApp. And it's still read by people, even though you think it's not. But the overall company, its parent company, the umbrella, is Meta. Metaverse, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It actually makes more sense than Alphabet. When I really think about it, I'm like, okay, I get it. I guess I'm feeling interested to see where this goes. I mean, yeah, it is underwhelming. I don't know what I was expecting, though. Like, it is what it is, and I can't expect that they would change a lot from that, but like that they would come up with something creative. That's not what multi-billion-dollar companies are known to do, even in the tech space. But Alphabet, again, I know I'm going back to that well, but that's talk about underwhelming. But I will be interested to see what plays on that name do they come up with, right? Well, and that part will be interesting.
We do know that as of December 1st, they're changing their name on stock tickers from FB to MVRS, which sounds like how you would describe a virus. As of December 1st, Facebook is no longer FB. It will now be MVRS when you're looking for it on in stock records.
Oh, so that will be Metaverse then, right? Like, yeah, clearly that's the play they're doing.
That's where they're moving, obviously. Yeah. So I think it might be time to approach Jim Boykin with a wheelbarrow full of money. He, of anyone that I know personally, Boykin and crew are moving into the metaverse faster and stronger. Now that's just people that I know of personally. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a bunch of other companies out there, but SEOs, this new world is coming. I haven't a clue what it's going to be like, what's going to be in there, how we're going to be selling product or representing clients or anything, but I can guarantee you that that's where the action's going to be, or somewhere very much like that.
Very much. Yeah, I'm excited like about that side of things. Like, it's going to be one of the fascinating things. But we've talked about that, and we'll probably talk about it again in our like December episodes when we're talking about what the heck is coming up, as we do each year.
Oh, I absolutely expect we will. I mean, the real question for me is isn't what's coming, but how quickly is it coming, and what steps are we going to take to get there?
Yeah,
because there's an old saying about tech, eh? Everything that was invented before you turn 45 makes perfect sense. Anything right. that was invented after you turn 45 is unnatural and probably developed by Satan or something. And I'm 53. And the steps we take to get to any given place actually kind of scare me now, because those rocks are very slippery and they move around a lot, eh? You break a hip on one of those things.
It is true. Now, we have we're both Gen X, right? So we do have the advantage of basically from the time we were in middle school, things evolved rapidly, both sociopolitically and technologically. Like things mm-hmm. just, the VIC-20 was coming out and the Berlin Wall was crashing, right? Like everything was changing very, very rapidly. So I think we will be less prone to fall into the, I don't like anything new. Like I know when I see this, I'm like, what is that next thing? And do I get a cool toy? Right. Like when I'm like, oh, okay. Will this be something fun? Will this be interesting? Of course, we're constantly, aware of security concerns and those sorts of things. But it is a big, anyway, I'm excited to see what comes. I think it'll be very, very interesting.
No, I'm in absolute agreement. Ever since reading New Romancer from William Gibson, I've been waiting to see the actual 3D representation of the internet, of cyberspace. I remember when I was a kid playing Quake and thinking this is what I wasn't seeing a playground arena. I was seeing a shopping mall that we were shooting each other in. And why isn't that floating gun a perfume bottle? It could be.
Right.
And I honestly think that's the way the web will evolve. It's just taken so long to get there.
Well, one thing I want to give a hat tip, interestingly, to two people, and we're on video, you and I, so you probably saw Mary walk through in my background. First on the button here was Brasco, so a big thank you to Brasco, and then Mary, who came in to write down check your Facebook message, and I popped over. Both of them were on it to making sure we knew this story, because it had just happened, because she had shared the story with me on Facebook. And Brasky, thank you for staying on this as well, and sending us that information while we were here to share it with our listeners.
Yep. Although again, I really did want to give listeners time to get their names into Facebook.
Well, we got to blame Mark for that. That's not our fault. We're just a messenger.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of being just a messenger, here's one that I don't know. I don't know where these ones come from, why these questions are asked, but the order of the links on a page don't matter. It doesn't matter if you put it at the top, you put it in the middle, you put it at the bottom. Just don't put 300 of them there.
Hmm. I disagreed with John's answer, but I agreed technically with it. I get where you're going.
You're right. You're right again. Absolutely.
But every time I talk, I find I usually am. No, I'm kidding. everybody who knows me well would probably disagree.
You're right again.
To say the links on the order of the links on a page doesn't matter. Absolutely right. I'm sure Google doesn't care about the specific order of the links on the page. What they do have and why they render crap is so that they can go, how visible is a content element on a page? If the link is in the footer, it is clearly going to have less value because it's reasonable server mm-hmm. model. It's less likely to be viewed, whereas something in the main navigation or built into the copy is clearly more visible and thus more likely to be clicked. So he's technically right. I'm sure they're not going, well, this is a specific order. Otherwise, we'd all just be going, well, my ones in the footer are important SEO-wise, so I'm just going to like put those up and then push them down in the style sheet, right? Like there's all sorts of like going back to the white, gray, black hat conversation from earlier, I think if we just pay more attention to how visible is this element on a page, but by the same token, I would go, if it's in your main nav, don't bury it down in the footer. Like in your code, like make it clear in the way your site is or your page is built, what the order are, just to reinforce what that order is. So technically, I think he's right, but functionally, I think he's leaving something to be desired there.
Pretty much around that. Okay, lastly, we've almost gone full clock. We've got time for one more thing to cover. This has been a tech show today, a total tech show today. Site quality. If you have craptastic site quality, Google's going to take away your rich snippets. So get it together. Site quality will cause a loss of rich snippets. I think most webmasters already knew that, but John Mueller confirmed that in a office hours vlogcast the other day. If you've got craptastic schema or your page doesn't provide a good experience, Google doesn't want to drive people there, and they're not going to give you extra chances to do it.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, really? Might I lose rankings too? Like, absolutely. I get it. He's answering a question. I don't blame John for answering it. And you know what? I try and remember that there was a day when I probably asked some pretty obvious questions, right, to people. I was earlier on in the process of SEO, like in the birth of the industry. So basically, you were the only person that had to field those questions for me, but being in ahead of me. But so I don't even blame the asker, but it is one of those where I'm sort of shaking my head going, really, that's not just a obvious thing to everybody.
You know why I report these things? I want John to keep on doing this. I honestly, even if it's a dumb question, I want him to keep answering it. I think it's our job to report it, even if we ridicule it while reporting it. I still think it helps amplify the answer and helps newer webmasters figure this out. And also, let's face it, Google, thank you for being open and then answering questions.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I give John big credit. I think the way, and it's not just him specifically, I'm not saying John is better than Matt. They were providing completely different roles, but I much prefer the way Google now is dealing with a much more Q&A style. We're just answering the questions as they're asked sort of approach, as opposed to these polished videos with T-Rexes, which we all love, but they answered just a very small handful, and they weren't as purely functional or even lower level like this. Like I would consider this to be a lower level, entry level sort of question. We didn't really get to those. So I appreciate what John's doing on these ones. And I think they add a lot of value across an array of learning levels.
On our way out the door, got to mention one more time, the videos that Martin Schmidt are publishing are phenomenal. The other day he went over how Google actually looks at a website and at what point rendering becomes part of the process. And he went through it from A to Z. I am just hats off impressed by the amount of the attention to detail and that he's just doing this, you know. It's a great contribution to the industry, so thank you.
Indeed.
Okay, we gone full clock. We're at the top of the hour as has been recorded live to podcast. So friends, you've been listening to Webcology on WMR.FM. The show was recorded live to podcast on the 28th of October, 2021. On behalf of Dave Davies, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always. Dave Davies from Beanstalk Internet Marketing. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Friends, COVID is still real. People are dying from it. Get vaccinated. We want our economy back so bad. I want to be able to go to a restaurant without having to show my damn vaccine passport. And I want to be able to go to a movie without worrying about the guy behind me hacking away. Get yourselves vaccinated. Let's get past this. Move forward with our society and our economy. Thank you so much for listening. Be well. Be kind to each other. Stay safe. Rank well. And we'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in this WMR.FM program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMR.FM. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.